Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking today about homeschooling. It's an issue, of course, that comes up recurringly, but there's a massive new study out indicating that it is growing in unusual places. Just a quote from one recent news story here. It says that homeschooling is no longer the first choice for evangelical Christians and left-wing back-to-nature types only. It turns out it's going mainstream. As a matter of fact, I like the way one reporter put it. He said, everybody at least knows somebody who's homeschooling. Now, that represents one of the most incredible revolutions in American educational patterns that we can imagine. And as a matter of fact, I think it probably is only ranked with significance with such things as the formal organization of the public school. You're talking here about a massive shift, not only in the way people do education, but first of all, in the way we think about the education of children. We're going to be talking about that today on the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking about the why, the how, and the past, present, and future of homeschooling. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to your calls in just a minute. First, to review some issues in the news. At my website at albertmohler.com, today I posted an article that I consider to be one of the most important I put up there in a very, very long time. Because it tells a story that we all need to know. And it's one of those things that comes around with some new data that really does open our eyes to something we wish we had seen a long time ago. It explains something that had been inexplicable. Let's get to the point. Most people would be very much amazed to know that people like Ted Kennedy, Jesse Jackson, and Al Gore were once staunchly pro-life, adamantly anti-abortion. As recently as 1971, Ted Kennedy wrote to a constituent in a letter. He said this, "When history looks back to this era, it should recognize this generation as one which cared about human beings enough to halt the practice of war, to provide a decent living for every family, and to fulfill its responsibility to its children," listen to these words, "from the very moment of conception," end quote. Al Gore and Jesse Jackson were both pro-life. Al Gore ran for the United States Congress from Tennessee and later statewide for the United States Senate from Tennessee as a pro-life Democrat. Jesse Jackson was known for his pro-life convictions and at one point had written articles in which he suggested that the disproportionate number of African-American babies who were aborted was a sign of an intentional racism. But when both Jesse Jackson and Al Gore launched campaigns for the presidency, by that time the Democratic Party had adopted the pro-choice mantra as a central part of its platform, and no one could hope to gain the nomination of the Democratic Party for president without solid pro-choice and pro-abortion credentials. And so, no surprise here, Al Gore and Jesse Jackson both changed their tune. But Ted Kennedy, in terms of how he's known, Senator Edward Kennedy, had changed his position long before that. Now the Wall Street Journal publishes an article. The article is, I think, one of the most important that I've seen in a very long time. It's by Ann Hendershot. Ann Hendershot of King's College in New York City. She documents in her article how support for abortion became Kennedy dogma, that the shift in the Kennedy family's position on abortion went back to a strategic meeting held in the early 1970s in their Hyannisport estate, in which a group of liberal Roman Catholic theologians met with the family in order to give them political cover to change their position. Let me read to you from her Wall Street Journal article. She says that politicians began to realize that despite the Catholic Church's teachings to the contrary, they were going to have to come up with a way of embracing the abortion rights movement. She speaks very specifically. Here's her narrative. At a meeting at the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport, Massachusetts, on a hot summer day in 1964, the Kennedy family and its advisors and allies were coached by leading theologians and Catholic college professors on how to accept and promote abortion with a clear conscience. It's very, very interesting. You start looking at this, it goes back to names that I now recognize, such as Robert Drennan and Charles Curran, and they gave the cover. But, you know, it really is frightening to think that at that meeting, without any doubt, decisions were made that contributed to the deaths of countless unborn babies. This kind of political cover was given by theologians As I wrote in my article, there are a couple of big lessons to be learned here. Number one, there are theologians who seem to be ever ready to subvert the teachings of their own church and to do so while trying at the same time to receive the salary of the church and to claim faithfulness. The second thing is there are politicians who are looking for cover. And the intersection here, very sadly, is when the theologians willing to compromise and the politicians looking for cover find each other. They found each other at Hyannisport, Massachusetts, and that led to the Kennedy family turning its massive and powerful influence away from the sanctity of human life and towards an unabashed and adamant pro-abortion position such that, and this was the occasion of Ann Hittershot's article, now that Caroline Kennedy is lined up to presumably or possibly be the next senator, Kennedy senator, she has already announced her own pro-choice, pro-abortion convictions very loudly. She says this, Ms. Kennedy was so concerned to assure pro-abortion leaders in New York that on the same day Ms. Kennedy telephoned New York's Governor David Patterson to declare interest in the Senate seat, one of her first calls was to an abortion rights group indicating she'll be strongly pro-choice. And it turns out in subsequent comments that Caroline Kennedy is indicated not only that she will be pro-choice, but that she opposes even parental notification laws and supports even what presumably we would call a partial birth abortion. Very, very interesting. It's a tragic story. I hope before too long we can continue this conversation on this very topic, because I think this is one of those historical narratives that should absolutely be kind of front and center in our minds for some time as we think about how it is that a teaching as simple, as clear, as easy to understand, as transparently authoritative as the teaching that every single human life has and possesses human dignity from the moment of conception until natural death, that such a conception as that, a conviction as that, can be so readily overturned in a meeting, that serves as a warning to us all. Speaking of warnings, those who think political corruption may have no consequences certainly will understand a vote of 114-1. That was the vote in the Illinois House of Representatives earlier today to impeach Governor Rob Blagojevich. It's an unprecedented action that, according to the Associated Press, sets up a Senate trial on whether he should be thrown out for abuse of power, including allegations that he tried to sell President-elect Barack Obama's vacant Senate seat. According to the transcript here, during the House of Representatives' 90-minute debate on impeachment, no one spoke up to defend the governor. The representative of one Chicago district, Milton Patterson, a Democrat, made the sole vote against impeaching Blagojevich. It'll be very interesting to see what happens now, because I'll tell you, as unbelievable as those excerpted transcripts were, those recordings were that we heard when you had the district attorney, the U.S. attorney there, presenting his charges against the governor. What to me is even more amazing is that the governor appears to have a tenacity that goes beyond anything anyone could have imagined and is apparently outmaneuvering a good many of the politicians and officials both in Washington and in Illinois. So I wouldn't write him off, but he is now impeached. And that means it sets up a trial. An awful lot of Americans right now are looking for work. The jobless rate has surged to 7.2%, according to the Wall Street Journal. And that's just another reminder that in this kind of economic dislocation, one of the things that that happens is a massive change in the workplace. And this has happened before, but we certainly need to be concerned for those who are now looking for jobs. Nearly 2 million of the job losses are in the last 4 months alone. As the Wall Street Journal says, that is a sign that the recession accelerated as the financial crisis intensified and should drag on well into the new year. Well, let's at least hope that with the energy of an incoming administration and also the kind of perhaps sober-minded, clear-headed thinking that comes on the other side of some consternation and panic, that we can have a recovery faster than that. I at least pray so and hope so. Speaking of a switch on a major moral and legislative issue, the San Francisco Chronicle is out with a very interesting story about the Attorney General of California, Jerry Brown. Of course, he's a former governor. He has become a hero to gay rights activists lately because he's given those activists his support in seeking to have the California Supreme Court reverse the decision of California voters to approve Proposition 8. perhaps a little embarrassing to him, it has now been brought up that 32 years ago, when he was the governor of California, he is the man who signed the landmark bill that changed the state's definition of marriage from a contract between two persons to one specifically between a man and a woman. You would think that'd be embarrassing to him to be caught in this kind of change of mind. He said that his decision earlier was totally appropriate for the time. He was simply clarifying legislative intent. Well, once again, you got to come up with some way to explain why you sold out on an issue that big. We'll be back to talk about why homeschooling is going mainstream on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The whole issue of homeschooling is one that is fairly new. If you're looking at American history, you're talking about the last 30 years. It began as a very small movement, hardly a blip, demographically speaking. And there were some legal battles to be fought and some other issues that had to be determined. And now we are reaching some kind of quantum mass with homeschooling in America. USA Today, a news story that came out earlier this week. Listen to the first couple of lines. The ranks of America's homeschooled children have continued a steady climb over the past 5 years, and new research indicates broader reasons for the appeal. The number of homeschooled kids hit 1.5 million in 2007, up 74% from when the Department of Education's National Center for Education Statistics started keeping track in 1999. Up 36% just since 2003. Very interesting. Gail Mulligan, a statistician at the center, says there's no reason to believe it will not keep going up. Now, very interesting. There are six different reasons that were offered here in this major research project as the motivation for why parents chose homeschooling. And as a matter of fact, they added a seventh. But these particular the rationales make a lot of sense. And what's interesting is that, at least in terms of the caricature, and the national media works on the basis of caricature. Caricature comes down to this. Who's doing homeschooling? If you ask the elite media, they'll say generally two different groups. Group number one, very conservative Christians. Very conservative Christians whose rationale is to pull their children out of what they see as a more toxic, less healthy school setting in the public schools, and whether it is ideological, as in the children just should not be in any public school, or whether it's experiential, some bad experience in a public school, these conservative Christians have pulled their children out. There's an entire subculture of conservative Christian literature and curricula and all the rest, enormous support systems, local churches. It has exploded. That is the one side caricature. And on the other side, perhaps fewer in number in terms of the public impression are those who are described by one of the reporters here as the Birkenstock homeschoolers. This is the left wing, the more organic, even new age in some case crowd. They're, by the way, now represented by a group known as the unschoolers. That is kind of a radical approach to those who say that the whole idea of a school is probably hopelessly repressive and institutional. What you have here now is a report that indicates that it's not just those on the right or those on the left. It's folks all over the spectrum who are becoming involved in homeschooling. I have in my hand here the journal Education Next, which is a journal that deals with the educational program of the nation and covers everything from the public schools to private schools to colleges and universities, but with a main focus at the school age level. Milton Gaither's written the cover story entitled Homeschooling Goes Mainstream. It's really, really interesting because, as he says in here, and I love this, almost everyone now at least knows someone who's homeschooling. Now, one of the fascinating things that is mentioned in this is that a lot of people who are neither in the conservative evangelical category nor in kind of the Birkenstock, more liberal category, neither on the right or the left culturally, are interested in homeschooling because they now want time with their children. And the school schedule had become a consuming issue. The new homeschoolers are probably motivated by several different sets of motivations and probably would argue by several different rationales. But there are some people who really want their children to be able to go at their own pace, and they want to have more time with their children. They do not want family schedules to be organized around the school schedule. By the way, this article indicates that one other reason why some are doing this is because getting into some of the most prestigious universities, guess what? Being homeschooled and having an enormous portfolio of all kinds of extracurricular achievements and activities can actually perhaps represent an advantage. The other thing that comes out from this article is that most homeschooling is a hybrid form of education. In other words, homeschoolers use all kinds of things. My wife and I, in terms of our own children's lives, we've used a mixture of homeschooling and some classroom teaching and some other things that we put together, but it has been the way we believed it should take place. It has been organized in a way that meets our expectations as parents and our family schedule in order that we would have the kind of time we want with our children. So I understand this. This is an amazing new development in America. When Education Next puts out an entire issue on this in which Home Sweet Homeschool is the front cover and the text under it is age-old practice has new age appeal, something is going on. I also love one other thing that's in this. The opening editorial, the editorial statement in Education Next includes advice from John Locke. Listen to this. John Locke's advice to parents in colonial America was to educate their children at home. The philosopher said he could not imagine, quote, what qualities are ordinarily to be got from a troop of playfellows at school, usually assembled together from parents of all kinds, end quote. I got to tell you, that sounds just like the kind of language that would be used in revolutionary America. When he said that he recommended homeschooling rather than sending your kids to be with a troop of playfellows, end quote. I want to know what you think. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've got some good calls, raising some good questions on the line right now. An awful lot of you out there are involved in homeschooling, have been involved in homeschooling, or are considering it. It may be your children, your grandchildren, just someone you know and love who's involved in this. You know, as this article says, almost everybody at least knows somebody who's involved in homeschooling. Perhaps you have yourself been educated in a homeschool environment. I'm glad to say the college I serve has a large number of students that come. And as president, when I get to meet these students, I realize that there really is not any kind of problem with the transition educationally of homeschooled children into the college environment. Any more so than in terms of coming from a formal schooled environment. But there are some differences. There are some interesting kinds of twists and turns. There are different sets of experiences that are brought to the entire educational process and to the expectations of education. But I really believe in parents being so much more involved in the lives of their children. And as I have written and insisted at every turn where I have the opportunity, parents, we have to recognize that the education of children, our children, is our responsibility long before it's anyone else's responsibility, and we can't just franchise that out. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Travis calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Go ahead, Travis.
Yes, Dr. Mulder, thank you for having me, and thank you for your stance for the gospel. I really do enjoy your show.
Well, thank you for that.
Dr. Mulder, my wife and I are very committed to sending our children to a Christian school, not putting them in government schools. We've been doing that for several years now, and it's becoming very financially draining on us. And we've really been in prayer lately about homeschooling. We know many families that do that. And probably the biggest issue that we hear about is, well, how are your children going to be socialized? I tend to say I don't want them to be socialized in the world anyway, but I guess I just wanted to know your comments on that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And, you know, Travis, having been in the same situation with my own children, but now being on the other side of that, where I've got children coming to us, graduating from homeschool environments, coming into the college in particular, I can tell you that there are some issues there. But the answer is not necessarily at all that these kids need to be in a formal school environment, but I think parents just need to make sure that we are creating the kinds of socialization opportunities where our kids are really with a lot of kids a lot of the time, such that we're homeschooling, but we're not creating merely an oasis. For one thing, the local church ought to be the place beyond our family, first of all, where our children learn to socialize. Let's pick up on that topic and more when we come back on the Albert Miller Program.
Music. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about homeschooling. The phone number is 877-893-8255. There is a flurry of interest in the issue right now, and not only in the predictable places. For instance, I have here in my hand the report from the National Center for Education Statistics. It is really showing how that homeschooling is going mainstream. And there are some amazing new developments, such as non-traditional homeschooling options becoming more popular among African Americans, Native Americans, recent immigrant communities, and very wealthy persons who had been sending their kids to elite private schools who now are taking their kids with them, deciding to do homeschooling on trips to Europe and all kinds of things where they are able to decouple their family schedule away from a school schedule. Also, one last little subcategory here I found interesting. There are some who believe their kids can become super athletes or super competitors in gymnastics or anything else, who take their kids out and homeschool them because they are so involved in organized sports and athletic and training activities that the school schedule becomes impossible. Of course, if you're looking for an advertisement for homeschooling, it's hard to beat what took place last night in the national championship game, NCAA Division I college football, because the man who's probably mentioned more than any other player, Tim Tebow, of course, was himself homeschooled and is a testimony to that as well. The homeschool issue is our topic. We're talking about homeschooling, and of course, I find it really interesting. Some on the left call it unschooling, but whatever you want to call it, it's about teaching your own children in the context of your own home and beyond, but taking the responsibility here to come up with the curriculum and organize the entire educational process rather than looking for a school to do that in a formal way. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We were talking about the socialization issue, and just before we take another call, let me just say that I must in honesty tell you that I think you can divide the students I meet coming into our college who are homeschooled into two categories. And those are the ones who do have some socialization issues and the ones that do not. Now, of course, homeschool students aren't the only ones with socialization issues, but there's a particular pattern I just want to mention. I think honesty compels me to mention it, and that is where you have kids whose only playmates and kind of peers have been their own siblings, it is a little insular. And I think, especially what I said at the end of the last segment, I think the local church is the first place where a lot of socialization should take place, but you also need to help your children understand what it is to talk to the children of unbelievers. And to understand a Great Commission imperative, too, still within the context of the family and with parental authority as the whole overarching principle. But, you know, through organized sports, through other activities, through missions responsibilities and activities, and through the outworking of the church and its mission, there ought to be plenty of opportunity for socialization. And the good news is that an awful lot of these kids are socialized so that they're more comfortable among adults than others. And that's really important, because I'll tell you the problem with a lot of the others, you say the traditionally schooled kids, is that they are great in terms of being socialized with their peers. They don't know what in the world to do with an adult. Just something to think about. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Connie calling from Salem, Indiana, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Connie.
Hi. Yes, we're a homeschool family. My daughter is now a junior at Midway College and has done great. She's a 3.4 GPA, and she's an ambassador to her school. And the socialization thing that you were discussing, you know, I think it's up to the families. You know, my daughter has been so socialized, almost thought she was over-socialized when we were homeschooling, because we made sure we did proms, we made sure we did athletic things. She was involved in our local 4-H for 15 years. You know, there's just so many things that families can do that they should not let that keep them from homeschooling. And she's done great. Like I said, she's an ambassador to her school. The adults in her college are constantly making comments about, you know, you are so mature. You know how to talk to adults. You look at people in the face when you speak. She just has done great.
And that's great.
Of course, her testimony is, I will homeschool my children. Homeschooling was a great experience for her. We traveled. We made sure she had every opportunity for whatever studies she was interested in, we were able to to dabble into it, which you cannot do in a public school.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting point. Actually, you made several, but one of the most interesting points you make there is that you can really go at the child's interest. And one of the things that I often point out, and there are different options that are right for different families, and I've tried to write as honestly as I know how about that, but in a formal classroom situation, you teach to the median and the mean, and you really can't customize it just for every child's interest. I think one of the greatest things of homeschooling is when you find out what a kid's interested in, you can really get him interested in it. And use that as a way to learn how to learn. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about homeschooling. Interesting calls already. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Interesting comments coming in by the Internet. The issue of socialization, obviously, it's hit a wire here. It's a nerve. And good comments coming in both on the air and, of course, coming here over the Internet. Some of the Internet comments I found particularly interesting where people say, you know, socialized parents create socialized children. That makes a lot of sense to me. I think especially, though, in the homeschool situation, the kids are probably more like the parents and apt to be more like them in terms of relational attitudes and things than perhaps otherwise. But I go back to my point. I think the parents have the responsibility to socialize children for the gospel. I'm less concerned with socializing children so that they can have happy peer relationships as I am with socializing them for the cause of the gospel, so that they can relate to persons to whom they'll share the gospel. I think that is that's the bigger issue, the bigger mandate for us. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Jennifer, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
On the issue of socialization, I was homeschooled from the third grade to the 10th grade back when it wasn't popular to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have to say that it was the proper decision for my parents to make based on how I was. I was a really sensitive kid, and my parents really took the responsibility of shielding me from the vicious preteen years.
Yeah, and might I interrupt here and say that sometimes for girls, particularly vicious.
Yeah, and because of that, it truly allowed me to kind of cement who I was as a person. And when I ended up going back to school in the 10th or in the 11th grade, I wasn't the most popular person, but it wasn't because I didn't know how to talk to people. It was because I made the right choices. And I was salt and light in a world.
Jennifer, I really appreciate the call. Let me just ask you a question, and I think to ask this because of a comment that was made just a few moments ago on the program, that when you have children to educate, do you intend to homeschool them, or how are you going to make that decision?
I absolutely plan on doing it, but I also recognize it's a year-by-year decision, and that each year it might not be the same.
You know, that is such a good point. I'm so thankful you made that, because one of the best things that I think has come as an insight for a lot of people asking this question is, say you've got more than one child, and of course every child's going to have more than 1 year, you might make different decisions for different children at different times, given different needs, different aptitudes, different learning styles. And I think that's a very important issue. I really appreciate your call, Jennifer, because I think when you're thinking about this, you realize that what you have with the decision to homeschool or to use private school or a private Christian school is a decision that is probably going to have to be evaluated in terms of how it's actually working without embarrassment. I think that's just good. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Travis. Travis, what's on your mind?
Dr. Mueller, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you, you know, for the average person working the 9-to-5 job, how is it possible to find the time to homeschool children you know, I can understand if you're owning a business or if you have an entrepreneurial type of income, but how is it possible for that average family?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the issues covered in a lot of this new research, Travis. So you're asking a question that's kind of on target with some data that we have now. One of the interesting things that comes out of this, by the way, is how many parents aren't working 9 to 5. In other words, one of the reasons why an increasing number of parents say that they're homeschooling is because they want their children with them when they're home and not when they're away. And so out of the household and thus not seeing their children. So, you know, that's one interesting thing. And without doubt, you certainly have more stay-at-home moms. I do not juxtapose stay-at-home moms with working moms because stay-at-home moms are working moms. But working inside the home moms versus those working also outside the home moms, I think there's no doubt that you probably have a preponderance of stay-at-home moms who are involved in the homeschooling, especially of younger children. But the data is becoming more interesting all the time. And again, I've got this report right here in my hand. And one of the things that that does become more clear is that homeschooling is not one thing anymore. It's sometimes an amalgam of things. And so, you know, Travis, I would say this. One of the things about homeschooling is you can educate when you want to educate. In other words, you can set your schedule for your family. The classroom meets when you meet. And so you can decide to do it all day Saturday, you know, or you could decide to do it, you know, in the evenings. You could decide to do it in the mornings, and you schedule recess when you want it. And so that's the other thing. There are certain things that have to be done. And I think one of the big issues that's going to be coming up for all of us, not just in terms of how the state might seek to evaluate effectiveness, but I think, you know, speaking as a college and seminary president here, increasingly, one of the difficulties for an educational institution is in evaluating applicants. And evaluating applicants on the basis of what used to be called a transcript or a jacket of information file folder, because it is coming in such a complex and diverse way now that it's hard to have one single expectation or even two or three model expectations. It's really a case-by-case basis now. And we really do want our children to learn. And in other words, we don't want homeschooling to be just a way of avoiding the educational process at its best. We're looking here at maximizing it. And Travis, you know, there are some families, and I understand your call, there are some families who are not well positioned to do homeschooling. And then the issue becomes, do we change it so that if we're committed to homeschooling, do we change the situation so that we're better positioned to do homeschooling? Or do we look at another option? And, you know, I think one of the things we need here is charity and understanding. And the kind of mutual respect such that where we have, for instance, in a local church or in a group of Christian parents, you have Christian parents who are equally committed to raising their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. They are equally committed to maximizing the stewardship and faithfulness of their responsibility as parents to teach their children. But they may make among themselves different decisions. And there's a range all the way from public school, Christian school, private school, homeschool, unschool. Probably tomorrow a new option we haven't even thought of, but those are the four big ones. And I think when it comes to the individual family and the set of parents involved here, we need to give each other grace to make the right decision, pray for each other, and really do a lot of talking with each other so that we learn from each other what's working and not working and what to look for and what to be concerned about. And let's not forget it, how to communicate joy in the learning process from beginning to end. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Evangelical Christians are still very much a part of the backbone of homeschooling. The Department of Education report indicates that 83% of homeschooled parents, they say, that is, parents involved in homeschooling, cite, and Baptist Press reported this, U.S. News and World Report reported this, it's up from 72%, it's now 83% said, quote, providing religious or moral instruction, end quote, is one reason they homeschool. But, you know, as U.S. News and World Report indicates, that doesn't necessarily mean they're evangelicals. You know, there are an awful lot of people who are concerned. It kind of goes back to some of the stereotypes where you have persons concerned with same-sex marriage on the one side and people concerned with, you know, nuclear weapons on the other side and consumerism. I'm not saying those are mutually exclusive, but I am saying that if you have the stereotypes, you have both of them saying, look, the public schools aren't delivering what we're looking for here. So it is interesting. It's interesting to say the very least, and it's going to be interesting as we track this issue in the future. Very quickly, let's go to Tony, listening on KTGW. Go ahead, Tony.
Hello there, Albert. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're about to run out of time, but I want to get you on.
Okay. Well, I would just like to make a quick point of, you know, I believe that homeschooling needs to be a matter of personal conviction. You know, we can't pull all of the Christian children out of the public school system, because then where will the light be in that darkness?
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Tony, and I appreciate your call there from Durango, Colorado. Let me just say that that's kind of where I was aiming there at the end of the last segment. It is a matter of conviction, and it needs also to be a matter of respect. Different Christian parents, equally committed to be faithful in raising their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, are going to come to different decisions, and I would say even different decisions perhaps for different children at different times. And we need to have enormous respect for that. And what we need to do is really to encourage each other to maximize faithfulness and learn from each other in this process. And I really did mean what I said there at the end. We need not to talk about education as something that's a drudge we have to do. That just so horribly miscommunicates about the joy of learning. God made us, for His glory, creatures who love to learn. One of the most amazing things you learn about students is they really want to learn. Now, there are some dullards out there and some disinterested, ambivalence out there, but they're the exception, not the norm. And they can usually be reached if they finally get a hold of the love of learning. It becomes addictive. But the good news is that God made us as willful learners, wanting to learn and eager to learn. And we need to communicate that joy. And what we want our children to understand is what we're doing here is trying to maximize your joy in learning. And your joy in learning, not just for the admiration and respect of the world, but ultimately, far more importantly, for the glory of God. A good discussion will continue in the future. I hope you folks have a wonderful weekend, and meet me again Monday to Friday of next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation on the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.